Namaskar. We are celebrating the 150th birth anniversary of Swami Vivekananda by holding an international conference on world religions, diversity, not dissension. We are doing so precisely because Swami Vivekananda's thoughts are particularly relevant and important for the contemporary multi-religious situation that we have worldwide today. This conference has been inaugurated by the Honorable President of India, Sri Pranab Mukherjee, at the Rashtrapati Bhavan itself. During the past 2 days, we have been deliberating on various key issues that touch upon multiple aspects of this very large and complex theme. This has been going on at Azad Bhavan, which is the seat of ICCR. Today is the final session of this international conference. Well, when you think about our preoccupation with these questions today, it is quite natural to recall that only 2 to 3 decades ago, there were speculations in some quarters that with the spread of secular political ideology and sharing of scientific technology, the influence of religious traditions will gradually subside. However, that prediction has proven to be wrong. And we know that the religions of the world are very much with us. A common sharing of advanced technology that has facilitated travel and communication in an unprecedented manner has made it all the more clear to us that we are by no means living in a post-religious era. Swami Vivekananda had observed, of all the forces that have worked and are still working to mold the destinies of the human race, none certainly is more potent than that, the manifestation of which we call religion. Perhaps the single most dominant criterion used in the public discourse for distinguishing the largest human aggregates, one from the other, is by their religious identity, associated with one or another of the religions of the world. Indeed, the world religions still are continuing to be the primary sources from which the largest aggregates of humanity draw their norms and values, derive their sense of collective identity, and seek guidance in times of need. Consequently, the presence of the plurality of religious identities is an inalienable fact of the contemporary global scene. It is a phenomenon that has to be dealt with at multiple levels of exchanges and interactions by all of us. Today then, the central question before us is, can we move on to a plane of collective existence when the presence of diversity of religious traditions will no longer be seen as a cause for dissension, as it has often been the case before? Is it at all possible for us to view the religions of the world as our common resource that can enrich and empower us in ways that we cannot even imagine today? If we could, or even give it an honest try, we could then claim that we are indeed seeking to carry forward a project that was initiated by Swami Vivekananda. While exploring these issues with the eminent personalities present here, I have chosen this conversational format in order to highlight that the endeavor here is not just to invite a series of monologues, but to find out how can we gradually innovate a setting, especially with a view to facilitate the bridge-building task among the religions of the world. This is a humble attempt to carry forward Swami Vivekananda's unfinished project of enhancing harmony and avoiding dissensions among religions of the world. Speaking of religious identity, let me just use a couple of minutes more for trying to understand the genesis, that is the beginning, and the constitution of religious identity, as it is generally referred to in common parlance or in the context of our socio-political collective life. Let's begin by asking whether we deliberately choose these identities, or are these, by and large, attributed to us by the accident of birth. The picture seems to me, at least, to be very much as follows. One is first born into a tradition, a religious tradition, belongs to it, and only later one can say that the tradition belongs to one. While considering the question of dissension that often happens in the name of religious identity, it's indeed interesting to note that only comparatively very few of us actually get to choose their religious identity. As that would imply, most of the time, exiting from the tradition into which one is born. There are some cases, of course. There are examples of persons sitting right here that I know of, where one has been born in a specific religious tradition, into a tradition, and then has exited from it and has chosen another tradition. We also know that there are many cases where people have been persuaded, forced, and even persecuted to exit from traditions into which they are born. But even in such endeavors, would we really not hesitate to call that these are cases of deliberate choice? In other words, wherever there is no real option before us, there is no question of exercising choice. Thus, to start with, this is my humble submission, that we are born into a given religious tradition, and this is not a case of choosing. I assume, like most of us present here, that to be the case for all four of them. Born as a Hindu, born as a Buddhist, born as a Christian, and born as a Muslim. May I ask whether this is a correct assumption on my part? To all of you? Is this a correct assumption? Let me first say now that I am truly honored for having this opportunity to share the stage with you four. You have before you my four clusters of questions that are the same as those that were sent to you. And I request that each one of you respond to the same questions or questions, but only from the vantage point of your own tradition. Do not represent anybody else. Let this be an opportunity for all of us to start from the scratch. Every time I read out one of these four clusters of questions, I will indicate whom I prefer would be the first respondent. Otherwise, please feel free to volunteer. Please take your time, fully utilize 5 to 6 minutes for each cluster of questions, and please let us benefit from your knowledge. This means altogether you are having 24 to 25 minutes each for answering all the four clusters of questions. Friends, we are now going to listen from practitioners who are also all authors who have very ably propagated the core ideas of their respective traditions. Now, my first of the four clusters of questions. What do you consider to be the principal teaching of your tradition? What is it that has especially inspired you most, impelling you to serve your tradition all throughout your life, that we cannot simply attribute to the fact of your being connected with it by the accident of birth? But we'll be willing to grant that it could just as well be the case had it been a matter of deliberate choice. In other words, is there a central message that is specific to your tradition that you wish to share with the entire humanity? Because you firmly believe that we will all live in a better world if we adhere to it.
I was born in a Muslim family. My education, my upbringing was on the traditional lines. But when I reached the age of maturity, I developed doubts. I discovered that I am seeker and was sad with that version of Islam that I experienced in masjid, in madrasa, and in society. It was very chaotic moment for me. Then an unbelievable event happened. At that time, I decided to study all those literatures about religion, spirituality, philosophy, to discover the answer of my nature. It is very interesting that at this juncture, I read some of Swami Vivekananda's work, especially letters of Swami Vivekananda. In this book, there is a letter number 175. In this letter, Swamiji has mentioned Islam as a very shining words. This triggered my mind. This mention of Swami Vivekananda triggered my mind. I decided to re-study Islam. It was a very interesting story. So, what happened? After a long study of Quran and Sunnah and other relevant literature, I discovered that Islam was my choice, although it was not my birth religion. I can say that I am not Muslim by birth, but I am Muslim by choice. And here I would like to mention that Swami Vivekananda is my benefactor. I can say that Swami is my benefactor. He gave me a very important clue at that time, because I am a very rational person, very rational. I try to reason out everything. So, due to this mindset, I became dissatisfied with the prevalent version of Islam and also prevalent also the Muslim society. But after a long study, I discovered that there is difference between Islam and Muslims. I was confused between the two. Before this study, I was confused between the two. After the study, I discovered that there is difference between Islam and Muslims. If you want to know what is Islam, you have to differentiate between the two. You have to judge Muslims in the light of Islam's teachings and not vice versa. Now, what I discovered during this study, I discovered that there are two basic tenets in Islam. Basic tenets. One is that man should make God his sole concern. God is our sole concern. We have to make him our sole concern. And the other is that well-wishing to all mankind. Well-wishing to all mankind. These are the two basic tenets of Islam. And this addressed by nature. In this I found my creator, I found the purpose of my life. Why I am here, why I was settled in this planet Earth, why God Almighty created me, all these questions were answered. So I can say that I'm not a Muslim by birth, but Muslim by choice. And Swami Vivekananda is my benefactor. I can say that Swami Vivekananda is my spiritual guru.
In our collective existence, we see that these facts of religious affiliation has had actually dual impact, benevolent and pernicious. Be that in the history of two denominations of the same tradition, or where the religious context is definitively plural in character. Swamiji said, Swami Vivekananda, no other human motive has deluged the world with blood so much as religion. At the same time, no other human influence has taken such care, not only of humanity, but also of the lowest of animals, as religion has done. Nothing makes us so cruel as religion. Nothing makes us so tender as religion. Now, you know, we have seen this cruel aspect has been played out in such gruesome manner in the name of religious identity that we really need to understand what makes that possible. What is at the root of it? I have said at the beginning that we draw a sense of collective identity from our religions. Let me now ask, what is entailed in the teachings of these diverse traditions, explicitly or implicitly, that influence us to construe the otherness of other traditions in specific ways that has impact on those whom we do not perceive to be the members of our own religious community? So, my second cluster of question to you is, what is the status of the other in the philosophy of religion of your own tradition? What is the explicit or implicit teaching that is bound to influence the attitude of members of your own community as and when they invariably encounter these others? That is, those who happen to derive their sense of religious identity from sources other than your own, that they are to be gradually vanquished, to be eventually converted for the sake of their own good, that those who are reluctant to do so are to be perceived as doomed, or at best to be situated at a lower level in the hierarchy and somehow tolerated. In other words, the question is whether it is possible for us to be more inclusive. Can these others be at all accepted as followers of a distinctly different path, yet recognizably a legitimate path? If yes, on what ground?
And you know, Muslims generally divide the world between Muslims and non-Muslims. Muslim world and non-Muslim world. This kind of terminology is completely wrong and Islamic. It has no basis in the Quran and Sunnah. If you read the Quran, you will find that Quran always uses the word insan. It means that terms which was created by ulama in later period, Dal Islam and Dal Kufr was wrong. The real term is Dal Insan. That the whole world is already sant. So in this world, there is only one equation. There is man and God. And not Muslim and non-Muslim. There is not equation. The true equation, the right equation is Creator or God and man. I am great believer in God. Also, I am great believer in the oneness of humanity. Then I would like to say that decent, in modern terms, several Muslim countries have adopted the term Islamic Jamhuriya. Islamic Jamhuriya. This term is completely wrong. You know, Prophet of Islam never used this term. Prophet of Islam or his Khulafa never used the term Islamic Jamhuriya. Everyone, every group will be called with its national name. For India is India, and England is England, and Iran is Iran. No country can be called Islamic Jamhuriya. This is wrong. Then I would like to add that concept of perversion is alien to the Quran. I would like to say that if you want to know what is Islam, you have to read the Quran. There are only two sources of Islam, there is Quran and Sunnah. So there is no concept of perversion has no basis in the Quran. Quran uses marifa. Marifa means realization, discovery. So truth is your own discovery. Truth is your own realization. It is a personal choice. If you want to know what is the purpose of life, what is the death and what is life, in all those questions that is in your mind, if you want to understand about these questions, you have to study, you have to discuss. And after discussion and study, you reach to some conclusion. That is your religion. So religion is your personal choice. There is no concept of conversion in Islam. In conversion, you know, there are two parties, converter and converted. Two parties, converter and converted. But this is not the concept of Islam. In Islam, there is only one party, there is you. If you want to know one's truth, you have to study on your own. And when you discover something as a truth, you have to opt for that. Then there is a question. This world is full of differences. Everywhere there are differences. Among family members, there are differences. And in a society, there are differences. Even in one region, there are differences. So what to do? The best answer was given by Swami Vivekananda. Follow one and hate none. Follow one and hate none. This answer is also mentioned in the Quran. Lakum deenukum waliya deen. For you, your religion, for me, mine. So, I have formulated this Quranic verse in these words. Follow one and respect all. Follow one and respect all. This is the only practical solution how to deal with differences. We cannot eliminate differences. Differences are part of life. So we have to manage differences rather than try to eliminate the differences. So best answer is that follow one and respect all.
The next concern. Those who are familiar with Swamiji's writings know that in many places he has pointed out how noble ideas get trivialized by people of sectarian mentality. He has joked about how, for example, the idea of universal brotherhood been used by some Muslims and Christians. However, when referring to failures and shortcomings of the Hindu community, he has expressed his disapproval in strongest terms, sometimes even more harshly, even so harshly that it's difficult to believe, but always, in all cases, with the intent of reminding the followers of specific traditions that they have to live up to the highest ideals of their own traditions, that their social practices and institutions have to comply with those ideas. So my third question to you all is this. Now, I will request you to take on a self-critical posture and tell us openly whether you have noticed any event or a display of an attitude or an institutionalized custom or practice that has been carried out in the past or is still in vogue in the name of your own religious tradition that you abhor, because you are convinced that no matter how that has come about, it is surely against the spirit of your tradition. Please give us at least one concrete example and then tell us what you think needs to be done in order to eradicate it or prevent it.
As far as the religion of Islam is concerned, I never found any principle or tradition in Islam about which I can say that I abhor this principle. No. But as far as the Muslim community is concerned, I have a number of complaints towards the Muslim community. For example, almost all the present Muslims live in negative thinking. Almost all the Muslims. I traveled so many countries, from India to USA, from India to Arab countries. Everywhere I found that Muslims are living in negativity. They always complain about other nations. I have said that America is Adul Islam Rahmahid. Other Muslims say America is enemy number of Islam. This is wrong, completely wrong. According to Quran teachings, and I don't believe that anyone is our any enemy. I don't believe this notion. But if there is any enemy, and for the sake of argument, I would say that if there is any enemy, then what Quran says, there is a verse in the Quran, لَا تَسْتَوِي حَسَنًا وَسَيِّعًا اِتْفَى بِلَّتِي حَسَنًا فَيَذَا الَّذِي بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنُ وَضَعَوَةً كَنُّ وَنُّ حَنِيمًا. It means that do good deed in return for bad deed. And you will find that your enemy has become your dearest friend. What a delusory idea. According to this Quranic verse, there is no enemy. Every human being is either your friend or potential friend. So turn this potential to actual. So why complain against enemy? So I completely reject this idea that world is our enemy, the world conspirator. Then the other aspect of this negative thinking is that when you live in negative thinking, you will lose greatest blessing of God. Because all the blessings of God lie in positive thinking. Positive thinking. If you are a positive thinker, then you is able to develop your mind. Intellectual development and spiritual development completely is based completely on positive thinking. So those Muslims for living in negative thinking, in negative thought, they have deprived themselves by spiritual development and by intellectual development. So this kind of thinking is completely done, and I abhor this kind of thinking. Although all the opposites are living in this thought. Recently I participated in a Muslim seminar. There were so many Muslim scholars and all were educated, and what was the gist of that seminar? They said that Muslims are under siege. This was their word. Muslims are living under siege. This is completely wrong. You know, I'm in India, I am proud to be an Indian, because I believe that I am better than all those Muslim countries. You know, there are 58 Muslim countries. I have traveled those Muslim countries. But I can say with conviction that in India, I found more opportunity than is prevalent in those Muslim countries. For example, if you want to do something, there are two conditions. One, peace, and the second, freedom. Without peace or freedom, you cannot do anything, any great thing. And I can say, according to my experience, but in Muslim countries, you cannot find both. If any country there is freedom, there is no peace. And if there is peace, there is no freedom. But in India, I enjoy the both. In India, I enjoy the both. Here I enjoy peace, and at the same time I enjoy freedom. So I always live with shukr that I was born in India. Otherwise it's not possible for me to start this mission. I know so many people who were born in other Muslim countries, and they started mission like myself, and they were gunned down. They are compelled to exile in their country. But I'm here in India. I'm completely free. Completely free. There is no restriction for me. So this kind of thinking, that negative thinking, I abhor it, and I can say that unless Muslims abandon this kind of thinking, they cannot progress.
Thank you. While Swamiji was alive, at that time there have been several attempts to bring traditions together with a view to creating harmony. The culmination of this effort was actually the Parliament of World Religions that took place in Chicago in 1893. Swamiji was aware that harmony among religions of the world still remains merely as a goal. He had frankly admitted that so far that goal has not been reached because of a want of a plan that is practical. He wrote, "That plan alone is practical, which does not destroy the individuality of any man in religion, and at the same time shows him a point of union with all others." I now come to the fourth of the cluster of questions. Please take a few minutes each and indicate a plan of action so that a point of union among diverse religious traditions can be demonstrated as achievable on a collective plane. What is it that we are not doing because of which you think that diversity leads to dissension, even in our time, when technology has bridged physical distance in an unprecedented manner, giving us opportunity to know about each other's traditions as much as we want to? How do we transform ourselves so that in our zeal to emphasize our distinctness, we no longer feel the need to overlook the overlaps that are there and get ready to recognize our shared common values.
Diversity or difference are part of nature. We cannot eliminate the difference from life. So the only option before us is to learn the art of management. We have to learn the art of management of differences rather than try to eliminate it. This is the first formula that I derived from my science study. Then, according to my experience, difference is not an event, not at all. Difference is a blessing. Why? Because difference creates challenge. Challenge leads to discussion, and discussion results into development, intellectual development. This is the formula of life. I always invite differences. I always invite criticism, because it is criticism and difference that through which we can develop our mind, our personality. So this is my experience about differences. Then, if this is the situation, then what is the solution? According to Islam, the solution lies in the same formula which I had cited earlier, that follow one and respect all. Here I would like to give a very beautiful example from the life of the Prophet of Islam. You know, when the Prophet of Islam migrated to Medina, you know, he started his mission in Mecca, then he migrated to Medina. At that time, there were two groups, Muslims and Jews, roughly half-half. So, Prophet of Islam issued a declaration that is called Sahifatul Medina, which means Medina Declaration. In this declaration, it was mentioned that Lil Yahudi Dino Walil Muslimin Dino. For Jew their religion, for Muslims their religion. This is the best formula of management. So what happened? Prophet himself gave example. One day he was in some part of Medina and he saw a funeral procession passing through a street in Medina at that time. So Prophet was seated at that time. He stood up in respect of that Jewish funeral. One of companions said, "O Prophet, it was funeral of a Jew, not a Muslim." Prophet replied, "Alaysat nafsan, was he not a human being? Was he not a human being?" Here you can see that Prophet was able to discover the commonality between himself and that non-Muslim. So, this kind of artificial partition that he is Muslim, he is non-Muslim, this is wrong. Everyone was born by God Almighty. Everyone is human being. So he said, "Alaysat nafsan, was he not a human being?" And when he is a human being, and I am also a human being, so this is a true commonality. So this is the right solution to the question of difference or diversity. So according to my experience, this is the simplest and natural formula. simplest are mutual formula. Follow one and respect all. And I have no hate against anyone. I can sit with total with love or compassion with anyone. I have no hate in my mind, in my heart. So, why? Because I always see man a creation of God. Everyone is creation of God. You all are creation of God. So why I hate? There is no difference. So this is the only formula of living in harmony. In this world, it is impossible to eliminate the differences. So we have to learn the art of management, and by following this formula, we can establish a society of harmony.
Well, actually, this has been an amazing experience for me, from the moment of conceptualization to the unfolding of this event. Now, I know we are in short of time, so let me just express my thanks to eminent personalities like His Holiness Dalai Lama, Maulana Wahiduddin Khan, Dr. Karan Singh, and Reverend Tutu, that because they have so readily accepted my invitation to join this conversational format, which is a little bit different than the other conferences, where we get mostly series of monologues. And I'm really grateful to that they have responded so candidly, so sincerely to the questions that we have asked.